What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Big One Podcast. You can always follow us on Twitter at Podcast Big One. Emails are always welcome. PodcastBigOne@gmail.com. We are your weekly, with all things considered this year, motorsports podcast. We talk a lot about NASCAR. We talk a lot about IndyCar. We talk Formula One, local tracks. If it's got wheels, we're likely covering this week's races. Who do we have on the podcast this week? This is Baby G bringing you into things.
And this is B-Boy, not talking about motocross. We refuse.
I would agree. We're not going to be covering any motocross. I don't think I've ever seen a motocross race.
Super GP, we don't cover that. Rally, we don't cover rally. Australian GP. Yeah, anyway, we cover the good stuff. Yeah.
We've got a sponsor this week. So the sponsor that we've got on board is NASCAR Fan Rewards. They are sending me out to Phoenix Raceway with some free tickets for this upcoming weekend, which we'll get into in a little bit. So thank you, NASCAR Fan Rewards, for those comped race tickets for both Saturday O'Reilly Series and IndyCar doubleheader. And we've got the Cup Series race on Sunday, and I actually just got my tickets delivered this week. So not the greatest seats, but when you got them for free, we're about halfway up the grandstands for both races. Looks like we're kind of over in turn three. Looks like we'll have a good view of both the pits, the backstretch, and the start-finish line. So I am looking forward to getting out to Phoenix Raceway, but we can talk about that a little bit later.
Nice. I think me and New Guy, when we went to that championship race for Larson's first championship, we were between three and four, or like maybe a little bit more into four. And, you know, there's not, I don't think there's a really that bad of a seat there, just so short. So anyway, you'll have a good time. Thank you, NASCAR Fan Rewards. I really thought you were a scam, so I'm glad to see someone's getting something out of it. Let's jump into some storylines. So first and foremost, I want to set the stage. We're recording late this week, which I think is what you were potentially mentioning at the beginning of this podcast. We're recording a little late this week. This is Saturday. The truck race at St. Pete has already completed. Qualifying has completed. I just want to set the stage because, like, maybe we might mention some of those things. So, anyway, we're late in the week. Storylines from the week. Keelan Harvick has now signed to a Toyota development deal at the age of 13. I like the note, we're doing something wrong with our lives. That's good. But, yeah, I mean, that's cool. At 13, I get why they are signing development deals. Happens in all sports. Definitely happens in motorsports. But clearly, like, Keelan Harvick is actually really good. Like, I follow somewhat about how the kids of the NASCAR stars are doing, and he definitely seems like the most competent driver. He's also the oldest, so maybe that's part of it too. But he definitely seems to have the best, touch right now.
Congratulations. I believe he's 13, like you said. Mm-hmm. When I was 13, I was just running around in the backyard playing football, street hockey. I was not aspiring to be a professional race car driver, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think me and my brothers were racing scooters around our driveway, and I was
Razors,
getting some good bumping runs and, yeah, razors and, you know, breaking ankles and stuff. So, yeah, good job, Keelan. Going right into the next one, Joe Gibbs Racing has now filed a motion for a temporary restraining order and preliminary injunction requiring Chris Gabehart to cease and desist working on or performing any services for Spire, similar to those that he provided for JGR during the 18 months following February 9th, 2026. This is just part of that case, right? Like, they went to court because they couldn't really deal with it out of court, and they had no way to actually stop him from working for Spire. And regardless of whether or not they'll find it in discovery that he did give things to Spire or not, we talked about that last week, this is the best way for them to be like, don't give Spire the advantages that you had here. Chris did throw some things into discovery for the court case that showed his email to the CEO of Joe Gibbs Racing, and just kind of like mentioning how hard it was for him to do his job and how bad his performance was. And it was just kind of notes before he was going to go talk to Coach Gibbs. And just like, yeah, he looked like a shitty situation all around. I mean, he went from like one of the best crew chiefs in the sport to leading a team in like a shadow position. He wasn't really even leading the team. He was expected to just kind of take the shit that was being shoveled his way. And then, you know, everything that went on with Ty Gibbs is kind of getting exposed a little bit more. For what it's worth, I don't really ever see anything that, like, Ty Gibbs seems like the dickbag in this. It seems like the coach, Gibbs, and some of the other leadership at that team are trying to give Ty Gibbs a leg up, and it's kind of, it's gonna make him look bad at the end of the day. But, like, yeah, this is just a shitty situation all, overall. Anything to comment on that one?
There's two sides to every story, and the courts will certainly figure this one out, so I don't have any other additional commentary that other than what we had last week.
Come on, this is NASCAR. All we do is talk about court cases. Like NBA, it's all about the drama.
This is true.
Cool. Well, I heard there's a new all-star race format. Do you want to break that down for us?
There is. I don't know a lot about this, so I'm just going to go off the notes here. So new race format, and they are bringing the all-star race to Dover this year. All drivers will race in the first two segments. Lineups will be set by qualifying, and the top 26 finishers from segment one are inverted for segment two. Then we've got the 200-lap final segment will feature 26 cars, including race winners, previous champions automatically locked in. Then your remaining spots will be filled by results from the first two segments and the final position awarded through the fan vote. So pretty cool. Not going to be a full field, only 26 cars in the main 200 feature. And new format, putting the focus on on-track performance and fan involvement. So it sounds like a lot of racing at Dover for this All-Star this race.
This is a long event. I mean, that's a lot of laps for an All-Star race. And yeah, the format is interesting because they kind of did away with the open race, right, to race your way in. Now you race your way in through the first two segments of the event, and everyone races at the beginning. And then, like you said, yeah, previous champions, race winners, anyone that's won that All-Star race, they all get an automatic bid. And so, like, they don't actually have to race too hard in the first two segments, but depending on how well they finish, that gets them better qualifying spot for the final 200 laps. So they do have some incentive, but the rest of the open guys, like, they need to finish well. And that's why they're doing the first segment, invert the top 26 and let them go again. That way you see the people who have good cars that are running through the field and going to get good finishing positions. The one thing that's really interesting here is, like, the cap at 26. 26, is, first off, is, like, over half the field, right? Like, we get about, we have, what, 36 chartered cars, and we have, 20, or, like, would be half the field on, like, a normal race of 40 where you've got the full field, right? So this is over half of what a normal field is, but it will be filled up with race winners and previous champions. In the last couple of years, we've had, like, the 16-plus actual race winners every year. So it's hard. You want all those 16 to get in. You don't want someone that, well, you won a championship before but didn't happen to win this year, cough cough, Kyle Busch, to miss out. And so you kind of have to do something like this, but it does, I don't know, it just, to me, it feels, you know, it's almost more gimmicky while also being less complicated now. I don't know, what do you think?
It is certainly less complicated, and I believe it's going to make it easier for the fans to follow, because in some prior years, I was putting on the All-Star race, not a primetime event I'm, like, locked into, but they'd show these graphics, and it's like there's, like, a bullet list of, like, 10 items how you make it or qualify, and I'm just like, you've lost me. I'm here for an All-Star race. I think, in general, All-Star races across all major sports, motorsports are, and sports in general, are just bad at this point.
Yeah.
The only one that is honestly even tolerable is the NHL. The NBA is a
Four Nations. Yeah.
The NBA is a complete joke. The NFL is playing flag football.
Yep.
Baseball.
I'd say baseball.
Baseball's
is
still
fun.
Pretty good, right? You're that still playing baseball. Good. A lot of the guys do they still have the thing where every player has to get in, or did they do away with that? I can't remember anymore, but...
No, not everyone has to play, I don't think, because there have been guys that just stay in the dugout the whole time. But I'd say, like, now that you've mentioned baseball, this is the closest to the baseball format, because it feels like it's a full race.
True.
The 200-lap final segment is going to feel like a full final segment. And you know what? As far as this goes, instead of having all these, like, quick 20-lap, 30-lap stages... and reset the field and bunch them back up. Like, before, it felt like we were trying to create a clip show. Like, we were just trying to get clips of racing action. Like let's hope that in this 30-lap segment, we get 3 30-second clips of actual racing. This feels like, okay, we actually want the best stars of the sport, as well as anyone else, to kind of make this field, and then let them go for 200 laps. We're not looking for those 30-second segments anymore. So, like, you know, it feels more like the MLB now, and actually... just thinking about it now, I feel better about it. Thank you.
Yeah, cool new format. Looking forward to it. We'll see how it goes.
Cool. Let's break down the truck race. Again, we're late in the week, but let's talk about Atlanta. Truck race was on Saturday morning. We didn't get the triple header on Sunday that we were kind of hoping for, but we started the race on Saturday morning. It was a little delayed because of rain, but we get into stage one. Corey Heim takes that first stage. You know, he doesn't race full-time in the truck, so it's kind of a nice appearance for him to get that stage one win. Stage two, Stuart Friesen takes that one. We kind of talked about him and his incident with Tony Stewart the week before, so good for him to rebound back. But then stage three, the guy that just seems to dominate Atlanta in the trucks. Doesn't matter if it's the old track or the repave or whatever. Kyle Busch wins the race, takes it home. They did shorten the race, though. I think it was 11 laps short at the end of the day. What's your thoughts on this like race clock that essentially we got put on?
I really liked that from the start of the race, NASCAR came out and said, look, we're at risk of not getting the full race in because we have an O'Reilly Series race that starts on the CW, a different network. They've mm-hmm. paid to play and get the entire season for the O'Reilly Series. So they wanted to make sure that they had enough time to get the truck race in, turn over the track, turn over the pits, and then get the full O'Reilly Series. Gosh, I'm struggling every time I want to say Xfinity.
You're right there.
And
you're
I'm
right
noticing there. On TV they are doing the same, so it's not just
sure
us
are.
As, you know, major NASCAR podcasters that are having this issue. And I thought that was great, though. I mean, I was watching this at my parents' house. I had bowling that day, my bowling league on Saturdays once a month, and we were kind of just watching the truck race before we headed over there because I was doing some planning with my dad for our upcoming trip to Phoenix. And mm-hmm. right away, it's like, okay, they're either going to run the full race or they're going to stop at 420 and give them all the teams knew it, all the crew chiefs knew it, they
yep.
could plan their strategy around it. I absolutely loved it. So, you know, I'm used to watching some IMSA where it's a timed race to begin with. This is not an uncommon thing in motorsports, so
not
I thought
all.
It was cool that they just came out and said, look, run the full thing. If we're not there yet, white flag's coming out at 420 and then we're racing two laps and we're done.
I think to your point, they called it so early, like they knew the time that and how it was going to run, and they gave everyone fair warning that like there should be no complaints. I think there was a driver or a crew chief or some crew members or someone that did complain about it afterwards, but it was a driver, actually. It was a driver, because then people were on his Twitter and replying like, you knew this from the beginning. Like, if your team didn't tell you while you were in the car, sorry, but that's on you and your team. Because then he was like, it was funny because his tweet was all about NASCAR didn't communicate with us. No, your team didn't communicate with you. So actually, it's an internal issue. Deal with it. But yeah, I thought because it was announced so early and the way that it had to go, it was fine. And I actually really loved the way that you said that. O'Reilly and CW have paid really good money to be sponsors and to be able to put on the broadcast for that. What may be even called the best NASCAR series. And they deserve to be able to start on time for their event. And so, like, as far as it goes, like, that's going to be how it is. Truck has to move out of the way. Now, had it been a Cup race and then O'Reilly, I don't know. Maybe we would have had a bit of an argument there. But no, I think that was exactly the way it needed to go. Do want to call out the ending there. Kyle Busch kind of was out in front last couple laps there. Everyone that mounted a charge, it was the same thing I complained and ranted about last week. Nobody has the patience to sit in line, push another guy past Kyle Busch. You don't push someone else by, stay in line, you will not win. You will not pass Kyle Busch by yourself. You will not make it three wide and win this race. Kyle Busch had everything he needed. He could just sit there in the lead because everyone else is too stupid to wait their turn to get by him. And that was essentially Kyle Busch won by default. So, all right, moving on to the O'Reilly race. I'll break this down for us. Stage one, we had Jesse Love taking that stage. Stage two, Raja Karuth. Raja actually finished second in stage one as well, but this was his first career stage win here in stage two. Really great move. We'll break that down, I think, in a second. And stage three, after 15 second place finishes, well-deserved, Sheldon Creed gets it done. Can't wait to break down this finish because it was really fun. I'll say that, like, he didn't really have to do a whole lot. He made a couple good moves in the final five laps, but then once he got to the position on the outside line like he needed to be for those last three laps, he just held on, and then something else happened and it kind of landed in his lap, which I guess was a thing that happened in the Cup Series too. We'll get to there as well. Do you want to break down some of the action in this race?
Yeah, a couple of things to call out in this one. So early caution, which you never like to see, just kind of always a little bit of a downer when you see that lap five caution. I put this one in there because my guy Sam Meyer beating and banging with, I believe it was Taylor Gray. Big smoke on the front left of Mayer, which I don't like to see as a fan of the guy personally. The thing that was probably the biggest call out in this race, other than some of the great moves that we saw on the actual racing action, was the 54 pit crew member and absolute MVP. There was this loose tire in their pit box, and he's like a hero, goes and grabs it, and they drop the jack, so then we've got the loose tire. The guy just goes full on hero mode, grabs it, and then gets basically run over, and he's up on the hood. So
yeah.
I'm apologizing that I didn't catch that guy's name, but holy shit, man, that is dedication to the craft right there.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the stuff that happens on pit road sometimes is so scary, and you know, there's no great way to protect these guys. But I think that was, to your point, a really, really good instance of showing that these guys will put their body on the line. They will make the big jiving save or catch or whatever, just like anybody else in any other sport would do. They know what they're risking out there. And, you know, sometimes you end up on the hood, but then you end up a hero. So,
absolutely. Raja Karuth, this guy is coming to his own very quickly in the O'Reilly series. He had an insane, like, veteran-level move in Stage 2 that helped him get to that win. So well done, Raja. Congratulations on that first career Stage win.
Yeah, quick comment on this. This was Raja's race. Like, Raja raced incredibly well the whole race. Like, multiple moves in the first stage. Now, granted, you can make the same argument that, like, he was a little aggressive. He kind of looked like a Ross Chastain or a Carson Hocevar. But guess what? He's not running full-time in O'Reilly this year. He's not running full-time anywhere. These are really good opportunities. He's racing with the Hendrick affiliated car. Like, this is his opportunity to show his stuff, maybe show a sponsor that he deserves to end up in maybe the 48 car. You know, maybe rub elbows with the ally banking people. Maybe this is his move to be able to get there. Atlanta's a hard race to kind of say, like, oh, his moves there are indicative of like a really greater racecraft or something like that, but he really did race incredibly well, and I think he got some nice shout outs from a couple, you know, motorsports folks on Twitter just because of how well he was doing. He had a save in Stage 3 where he had a tire going down that was just ridiculous, because like when you lose the right rear, I mean, it's almost impossible to hold on to that car at any high speed, especially with people trying to get by you and not lose their momentum. And he did. He had a really good race.
Next call out for me is Cody Ware causes a caution from a back marker position, and these, I'm just
Cody Ware for you.
I'm gonna go on a little bit of a rant here. Like, every time I see a Ware in a race, you just know it's gonna be in the back, and he's probably gonna cause an unnecessary caution. So, Jesus Christ, man! Like, I am like at my wit's end with some of the stuff. And like, I know they have some funding. I know they're an underfunded team. It's like, dude, at a certain point, like, someone's got to slap these guys down and be like, get a driver in the car that can get it to the finish line without causing a caution.
I actually don't know who Cody Ware was running for that particular race, so I can't necessarily speak for Rick Ware Racing or anything on that one. But yeah, I agree. Like, Cody Ware has not ever shown himself to be a talented driver. He's only getting races because of his dad's name. In my opinion, at least Paul Menard stayed out of the way most of the time, and he didn't, like, cause wrecks and stuff. Cody Ware is just, not, like, he needs to be out of the sport.
He's
like,
not good.
It reminds me of, like, iRacing ratings. Like, I wish that we kept track of that for these guys, because there's some people, like Cody Ware, that I think would be so far down the list that they should just, like, get their license revoked. But anyway.
Coming to the end of this thing, 27 to go, Sammy Smith has a tire down, and this was kind of wild. His car was all over the place when that tire was spinning, man. And he was hanging on for dear life. You know, like you said, when that rear goes down, the car just loses all of its traction. So that was wild to see.
Kind of all weekend, not just in the O'Reilly series, but we saw it a number of times there. The right rears were going down, and some of it is when you do rub up against someone, especially if it's their a splitter in the front of the car, it does cut those tires pretty easily. But sometimes it's just because you made contact with the wall, and sometimes it's just because you're driving the car off the right rear a lot of the race. When you're at Atlanta, especially now, it used to be you drive the car off the right front. Like, you just drive so hard into the corner, and you try and make sure it wheels. Now, with the draft and everything, it's all about that right rear, and you just put so much pressure on it that, when it goes down, it is one of the worst tires you could lose. So, cool. Last 15 laps of this, you just say here it was elite motorsport. That's a great way to sum it up. It was, really. It was cinema, pure cinema. Really, really great job. The CW booth did such a great job covering this. I did actually want to compliment the Fox guys for the truck race at Atlanta. I thought they did a really good job on the coverage there. So yeah, really, really fantastic finish. I think when we got down to the end there, I thought, oh, it's Austin Hill. I mean, he's out in front again. And people are doing exactly like they did in the truck race. They're not getting in line. They're not trying to beat this guy. Jesse Love was up there. I was like, he's going to get behind Austin Hill, and it'll be those two to duck it out, but it'll probably be Austin Hill that wins this. And then what happens? Austin Hill gets spun. You know, he comes down, tries to make the late block. I thought it was funny, you know, the week before Chase Elliott talking about Daytona 500, I could make a block and then we're both going to wreck. That's what Austin Hill did. He said, I'm going to go down, I'm going to make this block. And yeah, I'm either going to wreck or I'm going to hold on to my car, I'm going to be able to win. I will say, what a fucking save, though. Austin Hill spun down the track, back up into the track, doesn't hit anyone, keeps the car going, and just keeps going and finishes the race. So, well, I don't know where he finished, but it was a really, really great save to be able to hold on to that thing and not wreck it worse than it could have been. And I think it's very fitting that Austin Hill's the one that gets moved out of the way for Sheldon Creed's first win, given all of their beef in history. I feel like Sheldon Creed's finished second to Austin Hill at least 5 times. But finally, Sheldon Creed gets it done. He didn't seem, I mean, I think he was overcome with emotion and stuff, but he didn't seem as, like, excited as I thought he would be. But I think it's just because he's come so close so many times, he's imagined it to happen so many times, that it finally just happened. He's like, whew, okay, cool. And, yeah, any comments on the finish there?
Loved it. I unfortunately didn't get to see the end of this live, so I had to see the end of it on YouTube on the replay. So, unfortunately, I didn't get to live it in the moment, but very happy for Sheldon Creed. And I just want to say that the CW booth, Adam Alexander, Jamie McMurray, Parker Klingerman, this is by far the best broadcast booth of the three major series in NASCAR, and these guys are fucking killing it. I love watching the O'Reilly races because we've only had 2 races so far this season, but even last year when it was a race that was kind of a snoozer, they're still keeping me engaged because they are just calling the action in a way that's an art form.
It's exciting.
I love what they do. They bring the excitement. It's like watching Formula One, right? The race can be an absolute snooze fest. You're watching paint dry and they're making it sound like it's the Daytona 500 or the Indianapolis 500. They do a fantastic job on the CW, and I'm loving the CW, what they've done the last 2 years.
I agree. We've seen how much better their broadcasting has gotten over the course of last season too, and at the end it was really, really good. And this year, same thing. It's just they're very prepared. They know how to talk about storylines. To your point, they talk about a guy going into pit lane and the where he's going to come out and he's going to merge back in with other traffic. That sounds exciting. Like, they make that part sound exciting. You don't even see it on a Fox broadcast. I would say that, like, the NBC broadcast for the Cup is really, really good too. But I think it's more engaging with the CW during the majority of the race. And NBC just has, obviously, like, really, really good broadcasters to call the end of the race. These guys sound like 3 genuine, well-informed fans in the booth. And that's what makes it fun. It feels very relatable to be, like you're with your buddies watching the race. That's what it feels like. It's really fun. Cool. Let's go into the Cup race. I'll let you break it down because I know I'm going to talk a lot at the end of this. So go for it.
Let's do it. Stage 1, your winner, Austin Cindric. Stage 2 winner, Bubba Wallace. And stage 3 and race winner, Tyler Reddick, going back-to-back. So I don't have a ton of notes on this one. A couple of call-outs. No qualifying due to rain in the area, so they just went on the metrics that they normally do. I didn't get to see a lot of this game live because I scooped up, as I believe I mentioned on our last podcast, some super cheap Milwaukee Bucks tickets, went out for some drinks with my neighbors before the game, but I did pop on streaming on my phone during commercials at the NBA game because, man, these NBA commercials are getting longer and longer, so you've got at least 2.5 to 3 minutes between that where you can pop on your phone and catch some racing, so love that. And then the other call out that I have before I let you go on B-Boy's Ranch of the Week is, good God, the cleanup at the end of this race to go green again was forever. I got home from the Bucks game and caught most of the third stage, and it was like, what is going on? They literally red flagged them, and I don't know if there was fluids on the track or what, but that seemed like an insane amount of time to get going green to run to the finish of this thing.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, for what it's worth, you did miss a really great race throughout. Like, it was a fantastic race. I think on Jeff Gluck's, was it a good race or not? I think it was a 93%.
It was very high.
And the 7% are just stupid, honestly. That thing deserves like a 98 or 97, somewhere in there. And the other 2 or 3% are also still stupid. So, but yeah, it was a really, really good race. I felt like, yeah, that last reset before the green-white checkered was kind of what I was complaining about the week before, where I'm like, we were going to run into a green-white checkered no matter what, but we could just do it in 3 laps and just get us going, not lose the momentum of the race. Yeah, it was so weird, though. I mean, I felt like the majority of the race was really competitive, but nobody was, like, making bad moves for so much of it. And then we just saw a couple bad moves cause not huge, huge wrecks, but, like, pretty big ones. For as tight-knit as that Atlanta race can be, and everyone's running, like, 3 wide very close together, when the wrecks happen, people do scatter relatively well. And I'd say that incident with Reddick and Hamlin, that was obviously like the for me was like a really big moment, because it meant that like Reddick wasn't going to win this race. Like, that's just where I saw it. I saw they did the in-car of him, and you saw kind of that nose get popped up. And then I saw them with the saws like cutting the car, and I'm like, okay, well, we're finishing like 20th or something at best. Like, that's a good finish. And then like when they get back to green, he had obviously gotten new tires, and a couple other guys had gotten new tires, and anyone with new tires just like went straight to the front, and he just kept diving low. He went low in every corner, low, and the other two lanes are up above him, so he was picking up 2-3 positions per corner, and within like 2 or 3 laps he was running 5th or 6th. And so like I was like, oh shit, okay, well, no right fender means he can't lead a line, but he can, like, push someone, and Bubba's right there. So when they re-racked for the green-white checkered, first green-white checkered, I was like, cool, Bubba's here. Reddick can't win, so he's going to get in line behind Bubba. He's just going to push him. They get going green. Carson makes this stupid bonehead move where he just shoots between Bell and Bubba. Honestly, just not even a smart move at all. Like, yeah, and I thought it was really funny because, like, Carson had just spent the caution talking to, like, each of, like, getting his spotter to talk to each of the drivers around him, saying, shake and bake, I'll push you. Fuck it, A, man. Like, you're going to keep getting more and more disrespect if you keep doing dumb shit. And he just goes in there and shoves it in a hole that was never going to stay open for him. Nobody was ever going to open that up and be like, oh, yeah, go for it. But when they get going again, Bubba gets the push from Reddick. Reddick does a much better job staying attached to him. He's got Briscoe right behind him, so our guys are working together. And they get Bubba out in front, and then Bubba just moves way too far up the track to make the block. You know, I think, like, we talked about it the week before. You got to square up. If you're the guy in front or the guy in back, you got to make sure you can get that push, like, directly on your back. Otherwise, it'll shunt you left or right. And he moved way up because he wanted to get squared up, but he didn't realize, like, Josevar's going to do exactly what he did the restart before. He's going to shove it in the middle. If he sees any kind of hole, he's going to go there. And that's exactly what he did. And when he did that, it became Reddick at the front. Under that caution, before they got the green-white checkered, Reddick's spotter says, hey, like, it looks like the car's pretty good. Just don't lead a line. Like, he literally said, do not lead a line. Because he's saying, there's no way that this car is going to be okay out front. But once Reddick gets out front here, he's got Briscoe pushing him. Same thing that's been happening at any one of these tracks. It's just like everyone else behind him doesn't get organized enough to beat him. He did not have the best car to be leading a line or be leading the race at that moment, but nobody else stayed organized or stayed in line long enough. And Briscoe did, for what it's worth, not make any kind of dumb Josevar moves to try and get by Reddick, and kind of just like supported him to stay out front while nobody else made a charge. So Reddick wins kind of, again, a little bit by default. But I won't complain about that. The back-to-back seemed pretty cool. That's going to be a race version of a car that I really, really want, even though I know they just kind of like put black over the part of the fender that fell or is no longer there. It's going to be really cool, and I'm gonna buy that for sure. This week we're going to COTA, and Reddick's really good there, so let's go 3 for 3.
I was going to ask you if you thought they would make a race win diecast that had that fender cut off. You know, I'm not in the diecast game myself. I just have the one Austin Cindric one from the Daytona 500 win that we went to and saw live. I don't know. I know they do the scans, and like, so if you have a winner that has confetti on it, that shows up. I've seen those before, but I wasn't sure if you've got parts and pieces off of the car, if they show that up in the diecast or not.
I gotcha. Yeah. No, they just kind of put black over it, and it's not like black tape or anything like that. It just like is meant to be like, you don't see this kind of thing.
Okay.
There is a guy that like makes custom versions, and I bet he'll buy a bunch of those and then like cut the fender off so that it looks real. I bet that guy's going to get some good business out of this one. And maybe I'll buy that version for what it's worth, because that's pretty cool. It'd be especially special if I had been there for it. But as such, still, 2 for 2 for a guy that didn't win last year is pretty fucking sweet. So the 2311 cars are out in front in points. I know we're not to points yet, but that's exciting. Cool. Let's talk about some other series. First, I'll cover F1. The Middle East races are in jeopardy. Again, we're Saturday morning right now, so overnight there was an attack on Iran, and Iran has spent today attacking nearby cities and countries, and that includes some of the places that these races are going to happen. So, yeah, we'll see. I don't know that they're going to be able to race at any of those Middle Eastern events, the early season ones. So, yeah. We'll see. We're what, 2 weeks, I think, away from the beginning of this season, so we'll see what happens. IndyCar?
IndyCar, we are going to St. Petersburg for the Firestone Grand Prix on Sunday at 12:22 Eastern, green flag. So first kickoff race for the IndyCar series down in St. Pete. Previous winner, 2025, Alex Palou. And your friendly reminder that Fox has picked up IndyCar, so they've got every single race on Fox. You don't have to go channel surfing. You don't have to go to FS1. You don't have to go to anywhere else. Full season IndyCar, every race 18 this year, if they pull off the Arlington Grand Prix on Fox. So loving it. Looking forward to getting some IndyCars on track.
Nice. Yeah, and should be no overlap with the Cup Series, which is nice too. So.
Huge lead-in. Yeah, love that. Love that. Love when they have IndyCar first. NASCAR next, both on Fox. So I am going to be parked on my local Channel 6 all day long.
Yeah, I agree. Awesome. Cool. Well, let's jump into this weekend's scheduling. We're at COTA and St. Petersburg. We've got the truck started this morning on Saturday at 12 Eastern. We've got O'Reilly, which is racing right now at 3 Eastern. And then we've got Cup that is racing tomorrow. O'Reilly's at COTA. And then Cup is also at COTA tomorrow at 3:30 Eastern. As of right now, Tyler Reddick is on the pole, so looking really good for the 3 for 3. Previous winners here, 2025, we had Christopher Bell, and in 2024, we had William Byron. So we'll see what we see. You want to jump through the standings real quick?
Absolutely. We'll run through the standings. So as you previously mentioned, Tyler Reddick, you're number one at 125 points. Right behind him, his teammate Bubba Wallace in second. Running through the next few, we've got Chase Elliott, Carson Hocevar, easy for me to say, Zane Smith, Joey Logano, Daniel Suarez, which is a surprise for me. I didn't expect him to be up there in seventh with the 7 car. Ryan Blaney in eighth. Brad Keselowski in ninth. Chris Buescher rounding out the top 10. Then we've got Ross Chastain, Noah Gragson, William Byron, Ryan Preece, my guy Chase Briscoe, and rounding out your top 16 with 45 points, SVG Shane Van Gisbergen.
Yeah, so some call-outs here. Obviously, the 2311, again, sweeping the front two. That's really cool. Chase Elliott's finished well at both races, so he's got 81 points. Look at the gap, though. I'm going to start with Tyler Reddick. 40 points over Bubba Wallace. 40. The 40 points after two races is 20 seconds to Ricky Stenhouse. People that have not scored 40 points in two races. Kyle Busch, Austin Cindric, Denny Hamlin. Christopher Bell, Alex Bowman, Ty Gibbs, Connor Zillish. Those are all people that have not scored 40 points. So it is 40 points is a huge gap between first and second. And then if you get down to about like 11th, 51 points. Between 11th and 23rd, there's a 12-point gap. So again, we're only two races in, so this is why everything looks so close. But it is very, very close. The two races that we've been at are both, you know, drafting tracks. Now we're going to go to a road course. We're still not going to get a great feel for how the rest of the season is going to play out yet in the points. But some interesting kind of things to kind of call out now that we care about full season points. Big movers of the week that I want to call out. Chase Briscoe with his great finish here at Atlanta and a really terrible finish in Daytona. Plus 22, so he moved up from 37th in points to 15th. So he's actually in the chase technically right now. And Shane Van Gisbergen also moved up 12 positions up to 45 points. He's now in 16th and holding that last playoff spot. Plenty of guys that are well below the line right now with Kyle Busch, Kyle Larson, Denny Hamlin, Christopher Bell, names that I already mentioned before. Expect them to move back up in as we get further on into the season. Any call-outs from you?
No, you covered it. Well done. Like we said, loving that we have to cover and actually care about standings this year. So I like that we're actually talking about standings. And, you know, you mentioned COTA's coming up next. That's a road course. So first three races this season are a bit of a wild card. We know SVG is going to be really good at the road course. You got your road course ringers. But then really quickly, like, the sweet spot for the schedule when I really lock in is once we go this next, like, 5 to 6 race stretch, you got Phoenix, Vegas, Darlington, Martinsville, Bristol, and Kansas. Like, those are
beautiful.
Mostly races that deliver. Phoenix can be hit or miss. It depends. I'm excited because I'm going. Vegas is hard as hell to drive at. It challenges the drivers. And then those next four are just like, Bristol's been hit or miss because like this next gen car is not great on it, but three of those four races are just bangers every single time. Right. So we're about to get into it here in the season.
And starting this week with COTA, we do get the more horsepower and the package, right?
Yep.
So like this could be a bit different. I hope Bristol will race better. I hope Martinsville will be better. Kansas is always going to be a good race. You said Darlington and Kansas, and my eyes lit up for both of those because they're so good. I'm just really excited for what we're going to see. Awesome. Well, this has been the Big One Podcast. We had a later episode this week. But we appreciate you listening. If you'd like to reach out to us on Twitter at Podcast Big One or on our email address, which is podcastbigone@gmail.com. I've been B-Boy.
This has been Baby G.
Thank you so much. We'll talk to you later.